Hey, good afternoon. This is Tanola Oliver, the host of the Making of the Mogul radio show and magazine. Thank you for joining me for this edition where the dream is free, but the hustle was sold separately. I have a few things that I want to talk about today. And then we'll talk about, I'll do some brief talking to or a few talking points from some posts that I made on Twitter under the Elect Leadership Academy Foundation as it relates to workplace tactics and information as far as workforce development. Anyhow, that's where we'll end the conversation at. But I want to talk about a few things today in business and entertainment news. Let's first start celebrating Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. You know, he made a joke on one of his social media pages that they weren't treating him like Drake, and that Drake has bras thrown at him every day. Well, not every day. That he has bras thrown him at every concert. Not every day, but every concert. And he said, I need somebody to up my brand so they'll treat me like Drake. Why don't I get bras? He said, I want to see some tie-tyes. I thought that was hilarious. So anyhow, at his concert, I don't remember where the location of the concert was. It was overseas. But in the video, you can see someone threw him a lace black and red bra. And so, and it was a nice ass bra too. Remember I said Drake was upset. Like all this time, Drake been having fans throw bras at him, and he ain't never told nobody to keep his bra on until a plus size woman threw a bra up there. And then all of a sudden he was offended that people was throwing bras on stage, right? So he told the young lady to keep her bra on. I said it was because it probably looked like a slingshot coming up there because it was so big. So anyhow, I thought that was funny, and that was a moment to celebrate for 50 Cent and how connected his audience is to him and wanting to be able to fulfill that fantasy of he is in throwing bras up on the stage. I want to talk about the lawsuit with Diddy. I'll talk about that in a moment. But in the news, listen, I was just posting something about Jeezy on one of my Facebook pages. And just a shout out and a congratulations because his literary work, Adversity for Sale, just hit the New York Times best-selling list. And I thought that was amazing, right? We have really seen Jeezy transform, really, throughout the years from rapping to just business endeavors. And then he was married to, I think her name was May, if I'm not mistaken. Jeannie May. I'm sorry for not knowing her name right offhand. But anyhow, they say he filed a divorce from her and that they've been separated for a while. And I was actually surprised by that, right? Because he really talked highly of her. And he talked about their relationship and how she, he felt like she leveled up his life, right? Like we seen, at least from the outside looking in, we seen what we believed looked like Jeannie Mae, his relationship and his marriage to Jeannie Mae. Being a level up for him. What I think sometimes we miss behind the scenes because we see a man out of nowhere with a woman that may not necessarily be who we think is particular to his brand, right? Or his the history of women, right? That we've seen with a particular brand type for a man. And so we assumed that it was her, and that's what accompanied the level up. What potentially could have happened behind the scenes, right, is that he was already leveling up, right? And because of the level up, he attracted someone like Jeannie Mae that may not necessarily have been attracted to him in the former version of himself. But they do have a, I want to say, a toddler daughter. And we just seen Jeannie Mae on Facebook. I think someone posted it. One of my Facebook friends posted it on their Facebook page that her and the baby was shouting out Jeezy. So I always hate to see divorce, right? God hates divorce, and so do I. So I'm wishing both of them the best. I'm wishing Jeannie Mae the best, and I'm wishing Jeezy the best. And from what I can understand, he's looking for custody of his daughter, that he wants to have custody of his daughter. Now, here is the thing that I want to say about women in power positions, right? It is difficult enough for a woman to be in a power position and be able to move in between roles, right, efficiently, without there being any hiccups, right, between the relationship that she has with her man, her husband, her boyfriend, fiance, or whatever it is, which is why typically men in power positions don't choose women in power positions. And so it's usually why you see a man in a power position reach for a younger female, or if he reaches for a woman who has some influence, right? That you will somewhat see her influence either dissipate or take a less prominent role to his power position, right? So when people talk about power couples, it's always an interesting dynamic for me, right? So for example, like when we examine Jay-Z and Beyonce's relationship, people refer to them as a power couple, but Jay-Z is somewhat in semi-retirement, right? And really the family focuses on pushing Beyonce's brand, right? And I think probably the decision that they made, I know that that was an executive decision between him and Beyonce, because a man has the ability to come back and recoup an entertainment career at the same capacity that it was previously than a woman may necessarily have the ability to do, right? So someone made an executive's decision to allow her level of celebrityism, right, to play its way out for as long as the market base that she has receives her and continues to promote her. But you don't see both of them in the industry with the same impact at the same time. And I think maybe if for any reason or another she decides to step aside and maybe rest for a while, then we'll see him back out in the spotlight like we have previously. But right now he's really playing the less dominant role, right? You see him supporting Beyonce from the sidelines, right? From the audience with the rest of the spectators, right? And so what is my point in saying all of that? One of the reasons I made an executive decision about my life to step away from social media platforms. Now, I will continue to do the radio show and do interviews, but one of the reasons I decided to stop posting so much content on social media that was really connected to my personality and my brand is because sometimes it is, so I had you like you make a decision, right? Which one is more important to you? Is it more important for you to find a significant other, or is it more important for you to continue to push wanting to be a public personality, right? And so that was just a decision that I made, right? I made that, that's a decision that I, an executive decision that I made for myself. And I made that for the people who I have an impact on, and the people who that need some part of me professionally, right? And that's a different conversation. That's a different conversation. Maybe I will entertain that at a different time. But I think it was a strategic move for me. And most of the people that I have professional relationships with that operate in a professional setting in very influential positions, most of them are not, you don't see a lot of prominence of them on social media. And it depends on what type of organizations they represent, right? And a lot of organizations like to stay away from, don't necessarily want to see a lot of that. Well, that's a different conversation. I can't really unpack that for now. Anyhow, congratulations. Moving on. Congratulations. Let's come back to Deion Sanders. We'll talk about sports in a minute. There was one other conversation that I wanted to have. Bear with me one moment. I wish I had something to wear to the sneaker ball, because I would absolutely be there. I wish I would have paid attention that was tonight. I would have been out finding me something to wear now. So let's talk about Nas, right? Since we're talking about entertainers and rappers right now. So we know that Nas made a power move. I posted this on my Facebook page not too long ago that Nas, he just had a 50th birthday. So happy birthday to Nas. It said in 2014, Nas made an early investment in Ring. 4 years later, it was sold to Amazon for $1 billion, earning him $40 million. So happy birthday to Nas and congratulations on his strategic business moves. It says that Nicki Minaj, so according to reports, Nicki Minaj is actually the highest paid female rapper in the industry. And I think she's maintained that status for maybe the past 5 to 7 years, if I'm not mistaken. It also says that she's the first female rapper in history to have 75 songs surpass 100 million streams on Spotify. So congratulations to Nicki Minaj. Now, we're going to talk about Deion Sanders. I hope I remember to talk about Deion Sanders in a moment. I want to talk about Deion Sanders and I want to talk about Joe Burrow. But I want to do a sidebar, and I want to talk about Diddy and this lawsuit that he has going with. Hold on, let me pull that information back up. I just had it in front of me. I was just reading an article on CNN. What happened to it? Lord, just bear with me one moment. See, this is why I need a DJ, because this would have been a perfect place right here to just play a song. What in the world did I do with that article? I was going to read y'all some of the article, and then I was going to talk about it from my perspective. Here, I'll just bring it back up. All right, so I think the name of the brand is Diago. It's the name of the brand that Diddy had a business agreement with Diageo. I want to say maybe it is Diageo. And so they just ended their, it was less than a 20-year agreement, business agreement with Diddy following his lawsuit. And so I don't know if you all have been following this particular situation or not, but I wanted to see how it was. I want to see how it plays out because I was just having a conversation with a group of up-and-coming business, young business professionals, young business, aspiring young business entrepreneurs. And I was having a conversation with them about because we are in the culture and of the culture and creators and cultivators and innovators of the culture, that sometimes we don't take advantage of it at the level of a profitability as much as we should. And sometimes it is, I think it's a Bible verse that says that a prophet is not received of his own, of his own town, right? And so that's how I feel about the culture as it relates to marketability. So every group of individuals really capitalizes on utilizing hip hop and rap, right? As it relates to marketing their products and services. And I think oftentimes, African Americans, Black people who are amongst the culture and the innovators and cultivators of the culture, we take it for granted, right? And I often remind us on this particular platform that that the African American dollar is worth $1.3 trillion. Right? And how do they attract us as consumers versus producers? And the way that they attract us as consumers is they tap into our culture, right? By using our culture and what we are attracted to. So rap, hip hop, the culture of the industry is sales, right? And I was just explaining to them that it's really, really important that once they become business professionals, to tap into the industry, to utilize the culture to their benefit and not see it as being too Black, right? Because if everybody else can capitalize on it, then we absolutely ought to utilize it to benefit financially, right? In various business endeavors. So anyhow, the reason that Sean Combs or P. Diddy is ending under the agreement, the business agreement, is because he launched a racial discrimination lawsuit against Diageo. Diageo is, I think, the way that it is pronounced. And so basically what he said was, it's a London-based company. It's a well-known liquor brand. They produce other liquor brands like Smirnoff. And they said that his complaint, and I'm reading this article off of CNN Business, they said that his complaint was basically a baseless complaint. And they said that they wanted to end a relationship because his bad faith actions have breached their contracts and left them no choice but to end the business relationship. And so they filed for a motion for the lawsuit to be dismissed. And we already know from what I posted on my social media page that they did not dismiss it. And they're moving forward with listening to the claim of Diddy that they for racial discrimination. And so Diddy says that Diageo failed to market his brand as heavily as they've marketed brands that were owned by non-minorities. And so his brand includes also Ciroc vodka. And so he said that they pushed Don Julio and Casamigos brand, which is George Clooney's liquor brand, that that they pushed those brands over and above his brand of Ciroc vodka and there's another one that another liqueur that Diddy has, and it's escaping me right now. I can't think of the name of it. But anyhow, Diageo responded, the liquor brand responded and said, my goodness, Diddy amassed nearly $1 billion from the partnership, right? And that what he's stating is not right, and that they're false allegations. And so this particular business relationship started in 2007 when Diddy purchased De Leon from the business partnership, which is a high-end tequila. So De Leon and Ciroc Vodka are the two brands that he's been in a business arrangement with Diageo. And he's stating that they did not push his brands like they pushed other brands. He basically said De Leon's sale growth was capped at nearly 10 years because of racism, and that the company considered it a black brand and marketed it only to urban customers. He also stated that Diageo executive told him that if he was Martha Stewart, then his brands would be more widespread. And they said that, so the brand company Diageo denied those accusations. And their response was that Diddy has repeatedly undermined the partnership and threatened to publicly defame the company if they did not meet unreasonable financial demands. And so the company said that they've invested more than $100 million to help Diddy's brand to expand its footprint for the tequila. And they said that Diddy only contributed $1,000. So I thought that was funny. And so Diddy's attorney responded and said that them ending the business agreement with Diddy is basically like firing, you know, somebody that is exposing a company for racism. And his attorney referred to it as just a terrible business response to the lawsuit and the allegations of discrimination. And so it goes on to say some other things, but I don't know if y'all been following that. And it's been interesting to me because you all know that I follow. So I don't know. Have I ever talked about, so I own two wine brands. And one of them is a Blue Moscato. And the other one is Mon Cheri. And no, it's not Mon Cheri. I apologize. I don't know now the name of my, so the one that obviously that I sell the most is the Blue Moscato. But I do have another brand that I sell, which is a white Moscato, and they're signature brands for the candy shop. And so the Blue Moscato is a lot more popular because it really collaborates with the candy shop theme, right? And so I've been interested in watching the progress of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's various liqueur brands, because it's really we just really, I want to say probably it's only been maybe a decade that we've been taking advantage of that side of the culture and understanding that liqueur brands were capitalizing on the culture, and that's how they was making so much money. 'Cause soon as somebody said that they was drinking a specific drink in a song, soon as they rapped it, right? Or you seen them take a picture with something in their hand, like a bottle or something, like the those liqueur brands like made billions of dollars off of that. So I want to say it's probably been within the last 10 years that we've taken advantage of understanding how strategic the hip hop and rap industry is in doing business, right? Particularly liqueur brands. So I just wanted to bring that up because I was very interested in following it. As it related to the lawsuit, I wanted to have a better understanding of what the lawsuit was about. I didn't even know at the moment that it was about racial discrimination until I went out there and started searching some information. I was thinking that it was something like they had produced another liqueur that looked too similar to his particular brand. That's what I thought the lawsuit was about. I didn't know until I started researching it that it was actually around racial discrimination. And so moving on. So I was shocked to find out, I posted it on my Facebook page, that the highest paid NFL player in history is right here in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. And that is Joe Burrow for the Cincinnati Bengals, the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. So I was really surprised to know that, right? And then lastly, I'm gonna let you all get back to enjoying your Saturday. Let's talk about Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders is a brand, right? And there's so much I could say. There's so much I could say about Coach Sanders because arrogance is really frowned upon out of the black community. And again, I was just telling a group of young aspiring entrepreneurs that I can remember, like following Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's brand has pushed me to mature in specific areas of my business maturity, right? Because there were times where I wasn't strategic enough because I felt the impact of being undervalued. And sometimes that being the impact of feeling undervalued can be the tool, particularly once you're over the age of 40, right? Or approaching the age of 40, feeling undervalued is oftentimes a tool that they will utilize to prevent you from advancing or to make you miss out on an opportunity, like they did Monique, right? And so listening and watching his brand expand into a new market, which is well, I'm talking about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, which is film and television, watching how he strategically approached, knowing that they were undervaluing him on purpose, right? And still pushing forward and making the opportunity work for him. Now, he's been putting stars on blast all of this time, right? Like he has like nonstop put stars on blast just about a lot of different things as it relates to doing business with stars. And that's his brand, right? I don't recommend that for anybody, but that's his brand. He's in a power position and a position of influence, right? That's his brand. He has the ability to do that. And I think people that do business with him probably almost anticipate it. And I don't know that it's unwarranted, right? Like, sometimes people need to be exposed for what they're doing behind closed doors, right? So that the people that push their revenue, right, need to know what audience they value more than others, right? And I could say a lot about that. I could really say a lot about that, particularly I think about real estate when I have that conversation. Because you see a lot of things behind closed doors, and then you watch certain things outside of closed doors, and you're like, that is not how they feel about that demographic of people, right? You see a lot. I've never taken that approach, right? Because I'm a woman, so I'm a lady. I do things a little bit differently. I find ways to navigate myself differently in spaces. However, that works for Curtis, and I think he's gonna have to this is my caveat. I think he's gonna have to push that behavior, and he's gonna have to always be the person that is willing to place an organization on blast if they don't do right by the agreement, because that is what has worked for him. And I think that if he tried to adapt to any other style of leadership at this part of his progress, right, in various industries and as a media mogul, I think it would work against him at this point. And so while a lot of people are anticipating him to mature and stop putting business agreements with organizations that he's collaborating with on blast, I think it works for him. I think it gets him the results that he needs. And I think it wouldn't work for anybody else. Right? Like, yeah, you see brands, they have the ability to get away with certain things that other people cannot do because they have the grace to get away with it. And I talk about that a lot. And you have to learn what your grace is, right? You have, and really the grace of what you do is associated with who you are authentically, right? Like, who you are authentically is what people know, right? What you play about and what you don't play about, and they anticipate that from you, and it becomes your warning label, right? And so, you know, Curtis was blackballed for a number of years, but now he comes with warning labels, right? That he doesn't allow people to get away with the things that typically they would try to get away with behind closed doors, and it not be exposed. And so I'm saying all that to say that's why I wanted to follow that liqueur brand lawsuit between what was taking place between Diddy and the organization. So yeah, maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm not gonna say that. However, what I will say is the organization that 50 Cent has a business agreement with as it relates to his liqueur brands has a totally different perspective. I think the CEO of that particular organization is already vested in pushing minority brands, right? And so, not to mention that 50 Cent has put a lot of footwork into pushing his own brands, right? Like, it's nothing for him to show up at an event and be touchable, right? Be touchable, be have the ability to be networked with, right? In small, intimate spaces to push his liqueur brand. And so I think that makes a difference, right? Like, he stepped from behind the CEO desk and pushed his liqueur brand. And And so the CEO of the organization that has partnered with him to produce those brands, seeing him do that type of footwork, right? And to have that much vested interest, would be like, would be remiss not to continue to invest or find ways to market it more. Like, for example, now they don't advertise alcoholic beverages in the gym. However, the first time, what really caught my attention as it related to Curtis 50 Cent as a business mogul and as a businessman was when I was in the gym and I seen advertisements of him and Vitamin Water. That was what caught my attention about his particular brand, that he had stepped outside of the normal investment ventures, right? Into a sports drink brand that was already doing well, and then his ability to capitalize on it, right? To utilize the culture that he was a part of, to capitalize on it, not just as the face or the brand of it, but that he would have the ability to strategically be vested in it, right? And then as it sold, he was able to capitalize on that in very strategic ways, right? And reinvest those dollars. And now he has the ability to market various alcoholic beverages and things of that nature. And so that's that. I just wanted to step on here and talk about that for a little while and just catch everybody up on what's going on in business and entertainment as it relates to the business side of things. And then we're going to talk about some workplace realignment that I see happening. And so for many years, we knew that, so probably within the past 10 years, because of the shift in the hip hop and rap industry, and the way that it's been integrated into various components of doing business, right? Like you can almost, there are not too many business pillars that exist that you don't see some resemblance of hip hop culture. Right? Because it is really the derivative that is driving revenue in the world right now. And I had worked really, really hard to have an article published for an economic magazine. Particularly it's an academic, is it? It's not really an academic journal. But it is a business economic resource, and they publish articles. And I worked really hard to have the article published, but every time I went to submit the article, they kept coming up with reasons that I had to review and do something else to the article. And it was really just a one-page article. And after a while, I felt like I had invested too much time and energy into an article that obviously they did not want to publish, right? NWA, Ice Cube, it's an intellectual article. However, the blackness of it is beyond a shadow of a doubt, absolutely present within the article. But it articulated in a very intelligent demeanor. But that particular brand was just not ready for that type of article yet, and I'm okay with that. I'll find a way to publish the article somewhere else. But within the article, I talked about how there is not enough measurement of the impact of the hip hop and rap industry on all segments of doing business, from travel and tourism to hospitality to automobile industry, just a lot of different economic development, just a lot of different segments of doing business. You see the integration of the hip hop and rap industry, and that we have not, as a nation, and economists have not invested enough research into understanding how the culture has had an impact on industries and the amount of money that has been built, right? And the revenue that has been increased when people cultivate the rap and the hip hop industry or integrate it into their brands. And one of the best ways of doing that is by hiring a diversified amount of leadership, which is why organizations that have minority individuals, and I'm specifically talking about African-American men and women in leadership positions, see such a impact and the increase and the sustainability of their revenue once they place those individuals in leadership positions, because they bring a different component to how that business and organization has a way of doing business with its customers. They tap into a market that they were missing before, right? And so they may have had that particular demographic within their population of consumers, but it is the minority leadership, and I'm specifically referring to African-American men and women, that tapping into that level of leadership that causes very strategic alignment with increasing specific demographics within certain business segments, right? I talked about that in the article. And in addition to, I talked about that the rap and hip hop industry has produced the most African-American and or Black, whichever word you feel is more politically feasible or palatable to you, has produced more African-American and Black CEOs and executives than any other industry in America, right? And I talk about that within the article as well. And it's a conversation that we need to start having on platforms. And it's a conversation that we need to start having. As a matter of fact, it is a conversation that is starting to be had at the university level. I know of a university right now that has created an entire, well, they have a course about it, and they've created an entire track for talking about hip hop. Now, they haven't integrated the part, so it's about music appreciation, right? So I think that's a start, right? Talking about hip hop and rap as music appreciation, that didn't used to be a conversation. But I think it's now time to talk about its impact on business, right? And it's a global market. And it's time for the people who are from within the culture to be able to have the ability to capitalize on it in segments outside of, you don't have to be an entertainer to capitalize, or you don't have to rap, or you don't have to be a part of the hip hop industry But you grew up in that culture and still have the ability to benefit off of it in ways that you can capitalize off of it in healthy ways, right? By utilizing it in the industry and integrating it into the industry that you exist in healthy ways, because it already exists there. It's just a matter of, do we have the leadership in place in these organizations that find ways to incorporate it and integrate it into the business model that makes it healthy for all of the employees and makes it healthy for business growth? And so in saying all of that, I've noticed that the strategic alignment of organizations is shifting. Like for a minute there, we were in this space where, so for years we were in a space where you could not bring your whole self to work, right? Like it was, you leave your culture at the house, right? And you leave all of your personality, idiosyncrasies, and all of that at the house. And when you come here, you do your work and you leave, right? And so then we shifted, right? As we seen people starting, and it started out with the women's movement and people saying, I should be able to bring my femininity to work. And I wholeheartedly believe that. But I think it shifted from that. Like, I think it drifted from that in different ways and it became something else. And then as we've watched the ebbs and flows of society change, it's like, well, okay, if I'm this, I can bring this to work. And if I'm that, I can bring that to work. And if I'm Jewish, I can bring my Jewishness to work. And now organizations even now have prayer rooms, right? Which I think is essential, right? And important for someone such as myself, right? I just recently did a 21-day prayer fasting, but it wasn't about me. It wasn't about me denying myself of things, but it was about me praying more on a day-to-day basis. And I had a room at work where I could do that, right? And so I think that's essential, but I am starting to see a strategic alignment that is shifting back to telling people, if you bring your whole self to work and it is an infringement of who somebody else is, then that's a part of you that you don't need to bring to work. Excuse me. And not in an offensive way, but just in a way that says, this is a professional environment. And there are some parts of you that your employer and your fellow employees shouldn't know about, right? And that's what makes healthy environments, because, having this conversation from a workforce development lens and perspective, because anything that we bring to work that can be offensive to the person that I sit next to, it no longer becomes just a part of who I am. It then becomes a barrier and a discrimination for somebody else, right? So if my identity becomes a barrier of discrimination against somebody else, is that me bringing my whole self to work and creating a healthy environment? Or is that me bringing myself to work and manipulating an environment that should be all inclusive for everyone, and me not having to feel guilty because I'm not accepting of who somebody's whole self is? And I'm using the word accepting very loosely, right? I think the people who have had the hardest time in workplace spaces probably have been people of faith, right? And the reason that is because, like, some corporate environments, they drink a lot, right? And so so people who live their lives from a certain perspective, while it's easy for me, because I have this intersectionality, right? I grew up in a hood, so there's so much that doesn't offend me, right? There's a lot of things that don't offend me because of me coming from a harsh environment, right? But that doesn't, because I have a level of tolerance for that, doesn't make it any more professional, right? It's just a tolerance that I have. It's still unprofessional behavior, right? And that is the ebbs and the flows that I'm watching various workforces as I'm a part of some of these organizations, just various affinity groups that they have that I'm able to participate in. I refer to them as silent roundtables, right? Where if you have something to say, you contributed, but for the most part, you listen to a panel of people talk about various topics. And I have a very diverse group of organizations that I participate in. And I'm just, I'm watching the shift, because there's a lot of things that, in an attempt for companies thinking that they were providing healthy environments, really allowed a lot of things to slip through the crack as it relates to maintaining healthy environments, and it's become toxic. And I always use the example of like me wearing a dashiki to work, right? Like they're, I've never been in any corporate space, and I don't care how many African American affinity groups they have, or if they have an African affinity group or whatever, I've never worked in a corporate space where I could show up with a dashiki on and it not make people uncomfortable or just like look a certain way, like what in the world, right? And so hairstyles is one of those, right? African attire is one of those, right? Those is, and I'm talking about in the spaces that I work in, right? And so there are some things that we are already taught as African Americans that we don't have the ability to bring to work. And I think in organizations, really earnest efforts to allow people to feel included and inclusive in environments, it has created some toxic pockets and work environments, because now it allows people to be able to discriminate against people who don't necessarily have an affinity to certain things, right? And so I'm watching the realignment, and I'm watching organizations try to do it in a very strategic, professional, and indirect way. And there's some really tough decisions to be made. And so as I'm talking to the next generation of workplace employees, and some of those people are people in my age group, right? And so when I say the next era of workplace employees, I'm not excluding myself, right? Because we will very much still be a part of the workforce. Right. I think the people that have the ability to retire are like the teachers, the people that I would say the people that were working in manufacturing environments. But I think the people in the manufacturing environments are probably still working as well. I've seen some people working in factories until they was 80 something years old. However. I'm watching how, and it's intergenerational. It's a lot of things, right? It's intergenerational. It is, it's culturally based. It's a lot of different things. And so I am watching how companies are strategically trying to handle those things. And I think some companies are failing at it, because they haven't found the right people to place in the right seats yet. And so I think there's probably some growing pains that organizations are experiencing as they're trying to do some adaptability to how society has shifted. And I think I talked about before that the lawsuits are absolutely and unequivocally on their way, right? There's a lot of them taking place right now that people are just not talking about, right? Because so the moment that you begin to talk about money that's where the agreement comes in that you can no longer talk about it, right? Like when money hits the table, the first thing they say is, you know what, if we're going to pay you X amount of dollars, you can no longer have a conversation about this, right? And so a lot of it is missing the consciousness of the public because it's being swept under the table really swiftly with compensation, right? But it'll be interesting to see how those situations and how companies are making the necessary adjustments so that they're not running off people who are vested in seeing the organizations they be a part of not only prosper, but bringing productivity to the table, right? Because that's another thing. We were always under the impression all these years that the extroverts were the people that were the most productive. Now we see research that sometime is saying that the more extroverted people are the people that are doing the less work because they spend so much energy in exerting themselves in their environments and drawing attention to themselves, where the introverts are just, they're there to make the organization look good. And while they're there to make the organization look good, they want to make a livable wage and even excel beyond a livable wage. And so I'll keep y'all posted. It's been interesting watching the ebbs and the flows of it. And so this is Tanola Oliver. This is the Making of the Mogul Radio Show and Magazine. I am your host, Tanola, and I'm looking forward to talking with you and following up on this conversation soon. Peace.